You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. An afternoon drive home like no other.
It was doomed from the start.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, if you knew what we had before that,
a connection.
You two had a connection.
Fool me once, shame on you. You fool me, we can't get fooled again.
You get fooled again.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan in studio. The O-Dog will be back in a moment. Sports Center hit. Leafs wings tonight in Detroit. You can watch the game on TSN 4. You can hear it on TSN 1050. So, we'll be back in. Bob McKenzie's coming in later. Pierre LeBrun, I believe, will be in here as well.
Yeah.
And we've had fun with the Ray Ferraro Twitter stuff all day.
Yes.
If you haven't been following it, Ray caught up with Bruce Arthur, the Star, and Bruce wrote a piece about just how well Matthews is playing. Newsflash, the guy's been brilliant through four games.
No surprise.
No. Coming into the season, he was the top stats. 10 or 15 player in the league.
Yes.
You know, and he's just performed up to those expectations, if not exceeded them.
Yeah.
Which is probably where the conversation should go, because Ray was asked about, you know, where Matthews slots in terms of the league. And
right.
I think the majority of people should have McDavid 1. I have McDavid 1. You and I see eye to eye on this.
Yeah, we see that.
I've got McDavid number 1. If I'm building a team for the next decade, I got Matthews 2. Goaltending, I know.
Let's move goaltending out of the
conversation. Moving goaltending out of it. I would take Matthews, too. And I would have said that 3 weeks ago. I feel better about it now, but it's only four games. But Matthews, you know, in terms of the expectations and the ceiling, I think he still has more room to grow in terms of, like, exceeding those expectations.
Right.
Maybe in almost an unfair way, because McDavid has been so explosive and so good. I don't know. Do people expect him to get better? Like, is there an expectation that he can exceed what is already in front of him, that he's labeled the best player in the world? How do you go from one to higher than that?
I think what it is just breaking your own records. So I think you and I have had this conversation several times off the air. But if you had to see, if we said there's only going to be one guy to get 120 points this year, who's it going to be?
It's McDavid.
Right. So, you know, it would be a different conversation if he said, there's going to be only one guy who gets 55 goals this year. It would probably be Ovi.
Mm-hmm. And look at him last night again.
Right. He's magic. Ovi's just money in the bank. And then it's Matthews, it's Laine, it's, you know, who am I missing? I'm sure I'm
Kucherov
missing.
Sagan can score a lot of goals.
So there's some 38 to 40 goal scorers that I'm missing, mm-hmm. I'm sure. But that's more of a subjective conversation. That's the only thing of why I've seen McDavid push forward. His body of work speaks for itself. So is it unfair? In a sense, it is, because we haven't seen Matthews' best year yet, mm-hmm. right? We technically did with the 40 goals his rookie year. Last year, we lost 22 injury. So he was on pace for the same 40 goals. But, you know, what is Matthews? Can he break 100 points? Can he go 50 and 50? Can he? Because it's funny how he's talked about coming into the season, I wanted to pass more. You know, I think that's still a natural thought process, but he's a shooter.
Yeah. Like he's a goal scorer.
He's a goal scorer, but he does have vision. Most goal scorers I played with, the guys like Brett Hall, Phil Kessel.
Set I didn't up
play
in your
with Kessel.
Office
I didn't play with Kessel. But those guys can shoot, but they pass just as well. Mm. Like, Phil Kessel's an underrated passer.
You don't get to 90 points by scoring
terrific
goals.
Vision.
Just goals.
So that's what when I'm looking at the Matthews conversation, until we've seen him do back-to-back something, then you kind of know, okay, this is where we expect him at.
Right.
And then he either busts through it, or 1 year has an off year or whatever. But McDavid, we've seen, you know, do it 2 years in a row
and put up those points.
Exactly.
Right. Like Matthews. Actual. Now, to be fair to Matthews, if you now this makes it complicated and more difficult to
points
actually
per game.
points per game, points per minute, you know, and that gets back to the Babcock conversation. You didn't play him enough, where McDavid, I believe, led the league in minutes per game last year, real close to it.
Right.
I think if Matthews were to average 20 minutes a night, that could be an extra, what, I don't know, 8, 10 points in the season? It could be. Yeah. Matthews is more based on the tools, so to speak, where McDavid, there is an element, there's more awe than when it comes to watching McDavid because of his skating ability. I don't think we've ever seen anything like it. But he's put it all together in terms of the points, in terms of the hardware at the end of the season.
Right.
Matthews, it's like, wow, look at this guy. 6'2", 220, shoots differently than anyone we've seen before, close to it.
Right.
You know, you can't move him off the puck. He's got all the tools to be a guy who can score 100 points and 50 goals.
Right.
But until he actually does it, then it's projecting still more than McDavid, where you're like, well, I've seen it.
I've seen it with McDavid. And that's the one thing that, you know, I think people get really focused on is you're always looking at what he's not. You know, what is McDavid not? Well, he's not really good in his own zone. Well, yeah, every time he's
And I think, honestly, that's a bit off base, quite frankly.
But yeah.
I think he's better than people think.
And you're right, because he's a threat every time he's on the ice. Same with Austin Matthews. He's strong on the puck. Well, there's times that you and I have watched, you know, I've watched every Edmonton game and every Toronto game. You've watched every Toronto game plus a bunch of other teams play as well. Like, Matthews has had times where he struggled in his own zone. McDavid's had times. Like, they're not perfect players. So you're always trying to pick apart, well, McDavid, all he is a great skater. No, he's not. He's a great passer. There's a lot of things about McDavid's game that if you watch him night in and night out, it's what makes him special. Sidney Crosby, when he first came into the league, he was terrible on draws. What did he do? He worked to get better. John Tavares. You know, that was something, when you talk to these star players and they identify maybe one weakness in their game, they work at it. They work hard. Austin Matthews is still growing. I think McDavid is still growing. Like, these guys are now starting to feel comfortable in their own skin in the NHL. Like, they know exactly what it takes for them to be good that night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the exciting part. When you see some of the young players, finally, for lack of better words, the light goes on, and you're like, man, this guy gets it, and he delivers.
Yes. And, I mean, these guys, they were touted as special players when they were really young.
Yeah.
Like, McDavid was even on a different level than Matthews. You know, McDavid got the Crosby treatment. He got the Gretzky treatment, the Lindros treatment. There have been very few players.
He's been in our face since he was 12.
Right. And a lot of that is because of where he's from as well. Matthews, birth certificate is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, if Matthews grew up playing in the GTHL and was lighting that league up, we would have heard about him at a young age, too.
Yeah.
But McDavid, all the hype in the world, you know, exceptional status in the O, gets there as a 15-year-old, lights the OHL up, first overall. You know, I mean, we all know the credentials of McDavid. And Matthews, even though it hasn't been quite to the same level in terms of the points, his goals per game and his 5-on-5 play has been through the roof since he got into the league.
Right.
Where you look at a guy like Scheifele, who we brought up at times this afternoon, he went back to junior a couple of times.
Yeah.
And when he got into the league, there were growing pains.
Yeah.
And now he's been in the league for whatever it is, 4 years, 5 years, and you're like, okay, this guy has found his way and he's legit, and I believe he's going to be real good for the next 7 or 8 years.
Oh, for sure.
But that's maybe the difference between special and that next wave, which is what we were talking about earlier as well.
The layer, right?
Yes. You look at Sid and Ovi, they put their stake in the ground the second they got in the league. Ovi, I think, scored a hat trick his first game, or was close to it. And he had 54 goals as a rookie and 100 points, and Sid had 105 or whatever it was.
Right.
You knew immediately, you're like, these guys are going to own this league for a long time.
Right.
I think McDavid and Matthews are in that same category in terms of when they got here, you're like, okay, these guys can be real good for a long, long time. That doesn't mean there won't be growth, but they were so good so early.
Right. The other thing I point out, like, they are the same age, just with the late birth date.
Like, at least got lucky.
Right, because Matthews was born September 17th.
Mm-hmm.
So he missed the draft. He missed McDavid's draft by 2 days.
Right. Yes, by 2 days.
So
he would have gone either second to Buffalo or third to Arizona.
Right.
And Eichel would either go second to Buffalo or third to Arizona.
Which would have been scary.
Maybe the Leafs take Dylan Strom instead of Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
You know, I mean all the it doesn't matter because he was born when he was born. But you're right. They're both 97 birthdays.
That's the one thing that I like. People always say, well, McDavid has one more year. Well, because of the birth date, but they are actually technically are the same age.
Yeah. They're both 21.
Yes. But McDavid's, I think, a January birthday. So that's, you know, that's, he's got whatever, 6 months on Austin, mm-hmm. or 8 months on Austin. But it is, it's fascinating. And that's why I say, you got to keep coming back to these conversations as they continue to grow and envelop. Like, where's Patrick Laine's ceiling? Like you said, what would put him in that conversation? It would have to be 55 or 60, you know?
Like, yeah, I think he's got to be the kind of guy that, like, if he touches 60, which wouldn't shock me.
He's got to be like Ovi. He's got to be like that type of, you know, we focus on the position as well, too. Like,
which I think is understandable. And but yet we don't apply it all the way through, because I think defensemen get hurt sometimes.
Well, that's what I brought up. And you said, like, Victor Hedman is as good as anybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, Victor Hedman is never going to have 50 goals in the league.
No.
You know, in a season. Like, he's never. But he's in your face 30 minutes a night in Tampa, money in the bank on a cost-friendly contract.
Incredible
as well.
Incredible contract.
Like, you have to think, like, I know it's not the money you make, it's what you take home. Because Tampa, there is a tax situation, as there is in a couple other states in the U.S. and in, you know, in Canada, in Alberta. But I think, when you look at the way Tampa is structured, I know Toronto's trying to structure their salaries like that. Other teams are trying to do that. Winnipeg has Scheifele on a value contract, and some of their D-men too. Like, they make decent money relative terms to the mm-hmm. league. But it's I like throwing the money out the window. I just like looking at the player, because I believe guys are going to make money in this league. And I don't judge him. Well, this guy makes $6 million and he's no good, or this guy is a great value. It's what you do on the ice.
Yes, that's going to define you as a player for sure. McKenzie and LeBron will be in studio later. The O-Dog will be back. The UFC finds themselves in a bit of a conundrum, because now Khabib, who is going back and forth with Dana White on Twitter and on Instagram, his training partner was set to fight in Moncton later in the month.
Yeah,
against a training partner of Conor McGregor's, ironically enough. And I think that was really a part of the billing, quite frankly.
Right.
But he jumped. He was one of the guys who was in the cage, who sucker-punched McGregor, or went at him, and Dana White immediately said, okay, you're done.
Right.
He took him off the card, and now he's... I think Dana White has effectively said, you're done. You're never... first of all, you're not a big enough name. Who the hell are you?
Right,
secondly,
right.
What do you... You jumped in, and you go after McGregor, the meal ticket, after he just got almost choked out.
Yeah.
So now Khabib, who's his guy, has come out and he's threatening to leave the UFC. He's going to quit the UFC if Tukhugov, I believe is how you pronounce his name, if he gets fired effectively by the UFC.
You canceled Zubara, and there's the names I can't pronounce, but
it's not my wheelhouse necessarily, but right. I think we've described the gist of it here. This is where Dana White, though, has got a conundrum, because he didn't deal with McGregor's camp properly with the bus incident in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
He just didn't. And McGregor, he let McGregor completely get off the hook and then get paid in the end, which that's star treatment. That happens in every sport. This is different. It's apples and oranges, the fight game, promotion, and pro sports. But no one else in his group took any heat, any penalties. I don't know how I don't know how Dana White is going to handle this, because Khabib is a guy who now his name was on the map anyway with fight fans. But now after you beat the hell out of Conor McGregor, you're really on the map.
Yeah. He's undefeated.
Undefeated.
He's a killer.
Yes. Like, and just based simply on what he does in the ring, because he's not Mr. Promotion.
Right.
I get the impression like Dana White's probably going to have to call his bluff on this, though. Because I think in the end, Khabib, he can threaten all he wants. Even though he beat up McGregor, McGregor's still the meal ticket.
He is, but what's the next meal ticket? What's your next biggest pay-per-view?
I think probably...
it's the rematch.
Well, exactly.
So if Khabib goes...
I'm out.
There's your rematch out the window.
True enough.
That's the only thing I'm thinking. Because you want to mess with the guys in each camp. McGregor's guy and Khabib's guy. And then you can play the he said, she said thing. But if Khabib holds... he's the champion. Conor's got to come after him.
Yeah.
So if if Dana calls him out and says, all right, you know what, like, I'm going to hold strong, and Khabib says, fine, not fighting Conor ever again.
Yeah. then you're talking dollars and cents.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah. Then you're taking money out of the UFC's pocket because of what? So, you know, based on principle. I mean, this is the conundrum because Dana White, obviously, he wants to try to rein this in. You can't have guys jumping over the octagon and taking on guys who are just in a fight. You can't have that.
No.
But
like you,
these guys bend the rules for the meal tickets,
and that happens in all walks of life, not just pro sports. But you're seeing, I think Dana's got to walk lightly with this because Habib seems like a guy. Just again, I'm from the peripheral on the outside, just as a fan watching this, as a very principled person too, and you know he could get his back up and say, all right, you know what. My team, this guy, I'm with that guy.
I'm out.
And I'm out if he's out. So now what do you do? Eventually,
if Dana White actually believes him.
Right.
Now, that's another thing. I tend to agree with you based on my limited knowledge on his history. He seems to be a man of integrity, honor, blah, blah, blah. He said all the right things. This is my guy. If you fire him, you might as well fire me because I'm out.
Right.
In a year, year and a half, is Habib going to call back up and be like, yeah, so I've been fighting in this other circuit over here, and I'm making, you know, 100 grand a fight. Any chance I could get that $5 million meal ticket or whatever it is?
Yeah.
Because that fight will always be available to him. Habib will always have that in his back pocket, where if he calls UFC, even if he does quit.
Right. And he can call
Dana White up in a year and be like, you know what, I'm ready to come back. Because he'd have his belt stripped at that point. So there's no, like, I have to fight the next challenger. It'll be, I'm coming back and I'll fight whoever, and guess who's going to be waiting for him? It'll be McGregor. It might actually be the perfect, this may all add up
exactly
to be the perfect promotion. This guy quits,
he
leaves.
Year and,
yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out, like, how much would if Habib,
I think
well,
he
reading
made
it says it's
$2 million.
$2 million. Plus a no-win bonus equals $2 million. Well, he won, so and McGregor got paid $3
million. I would guess McGregor got paid more than that, too, based on pay-per-view buys and stuff like that.
Action.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, Habib, again, is a guy, based on just the fight game, what is he, 27-0 in his career? The guy is a beast, but he isn't a personality. He's not a household name, really.
Right.
Like, he's connected to McGregor.
Right.
So...
man, that it is.
I want to see that fight again, though. I don't care how it played out. I want to see the rematch.
But that's where Dana, even if he calls him out, it could play out perfectly that a year from now, all of a sudden, he resurfaces.
Right. Comes out of nowhere. McGregor's ready to go. We'll see. Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun will be in studio. The O-Dog will get back in here. Leafs Wings tonight in Detroit. You can watch it on TSN 4. Hear it right here on TSN 1050. We'll tee that up and get into a number of other stories throughout the league. The Insiders in studio next. It is a Maple Leaf game night tonight. They're in Detroit taking on the Red Wings. You can hear the game right here on TSN 1050. Pre-game at 7, puck drop at 7:30. Watch the game on TSN 4 tonight. The O-Dog back in studio after his big SportsCenter hit. You have fun over there?
It was awesome, man.
Yeah, one take?
We generally only do one take.
All right. Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun in studio. Bob, were you...
Almost hesitating on whether to say one take because he doesn't show up for, like, the one hit. He's gone for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He could probably hustle back and be part of the group here, but...
Wow.
I could hustle back, but I don't want to jump in mid-segment. Don't you think that's a weird flow?
That's fine.
We had something going anyway.
It's all good, man. We were talking UFC, actually.
I heard you. I was in my truck.
That was strategic.
So you're in your truck?
Yeah, I drive down to Studio 6.
Yeah, he drives. Drives.
Anyway. Hi, Pierre.
We haven't
seen
how many steps it is.
Yeah, I was going to say. He drives.
I just find it easier. I drive right down. I park. It's just right in there. Out. Boom. Drive back.
Listening to the show on the way.
I listen
to it. Doesn't miss anything that way.
It's amazing, isn't it? Hey, Pierre. What's happening?
Hey, guys.
How you doing? How you feeling after your whole Leafs lunch?
Traumatic. That was borderline torture. Wearing an Eagles jersey for 2 hours.
Big Cowboy fan.
But I'm getting over it. No, that was difficult.
Well,
I'm not going to lie.
I'm glad you
I feel dumber after doing it for 2 hours.
You should. Dumber.
You should. I'm glad you guys are in here because I was watching you on Leafs Lunch today, and you guys were getting into the whole offer sheet stuff.
Yeah.
What provoked this? Like, why are people freaking out about offer sheets with the Maple Leafs? Why is it exclusively a Maple Leaf conversation as well? Couldn't Patrick Laine be in that conversation? I mean,
no question.
What's up with this? Why is today the big day to be
Well, it's not the big day. It's been out there for 3 or 4
lunch.
Weeks.
Yeah. Because it's a Toronto radio station and doesn't give a damn about anything other than the Leafs, apparently.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's because DeAndre's still unsigned, and he's the biggest player left that's unsigned. No offense, Nick Ritchie. And the Leafs, at some point, are going to be in a precarious salary cap position. They aren't now. I mean, I honestly think any team is wasting their time doing an offer sheet on Nylander right now. What I was trying to say today with Andy Petrullo and Gordon Miller is that the time to make the Leafs nervous, if you were a team that were willing to go down that path, would be if Austin Matthews is still unsigned on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
You throw $50 million a year down at him and see what happens.
They're going to match that, too. They're not.
They may. They won't be happy about it. They will for sure match it.
Yeah. But I think they would match anything with him. You can't let him walk out the door. You can't. Like, I don't care what the price is. He cannot go anywhere.
Yeah. Which is why I think he'll be signed before then.
Yeah. And then that's on his group as well to acknowledge that, wouldn't it be? I mean,
and again, I don't even know why we're talking about this other than you asked, which is the way these things usually start. And then I'm going to talk about it.
And then we get radioed.
And then Joe over there is going to take me something I said here. Yeah. And Bob McKenzie says, offer sheet coming for.
Don't do it, Al. Don't do it, Al.
But in any case, I mean, if you're the Arizona Coyotes, why wouldn't you? Like, you know, whatever it costs. And I know everybody says they have no money this and no money that, but why wouldn't you do anything possible to get a hometown boy in your lineup? Mm-hmm. And I mean, if he'd been born on September 15th instead of September 17th, he would have been a Coyote right now.
Yeah, we brought that up earlier.
Yeah.
Like, looking back on the
48
draft,
hours,
McDavid was going one.
Was going one, and Eichel was going two.
You think Eichel
I think Eichel would have gone two. The consensus, what I remember at the World Junior that year was that Eichel was ahead of Matthews. And at the World Juniors, it played that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's a year younger. But Eichel was really good. And I think if that draft unfolded, if Matthews had been born on September 15th, it would have gone McDavid, Eichel. Arizona would have taken Matthews at 3, and the Leafs would have taken Marner at 4, and Dylan Strome would have fell to wherever.
Right. Oh, you think Marner still would have gone 4th?
Yeah.
Strome actually scored last night.
Yep.
Nice of him to make an appearance.
The Leafs were taking Marner no matter what.
Well, right. Mark Hunter and Ball, that was,
which turns out to be the right move in retrospect.
I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's worked out pretty
Especially if you consider that was a debate Noah Hanifin as a potential option there.
Yeah, Hanifin went 5.
There's a lot of talk about taking Hanifin.
Yeah.
And then Werenski ended up going ahead of him anyways. Yeah. Not ahead of him, but
Provorov was in that draft too, wasn't he?
Great defenseman draft.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Very good draft.
Well, our boy Ray, we've been talking about his whole Twitter spat today because people have been disappointed with Ray in Edmonton in particular because he had the audacity to suggest that Matthews was in the same stratosphere as McDavid. But when you consider what Matthews has done, I mean, the whole team had so much hype, partially because of the market, but you signed Tavares and coming up 105 points. But what you've seen out of Matthews through 4 games, well, I think we all collectively agreed we expected him to be a monster. But is he exceeding your expectations?
Well, I think the first thing you noticed was he's quicker. He's improved his skating. Looks like he's improved his shot. I'm not sure I'm necessarily surprised. You know, really, just because you're elite doesn't mean you can't get better. And the same will go for, I would assume the same will go for McDavid. I watched the one, you know, it's nice that the Oilers are finally playing a game tonight, and we'll get McDavid out of witness protection here.
What a butcher job by the league. I mean,
we're like, the season started a week ago Wednesday. It's like a week and a half. McDavid's played one game. It was in Europe on a Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard or seen from him since then. And he's the face of the game. And
that's a miss.
And, it feels like a
and I assume that I assume he's better than he was last year. The one game I saw, I've never seen anything so fast in my life.
Mm-hmm. You know, going back to Matthews, though, what's going to be a byproduct, I believe, of people watching his season, all the work that he does with Daryl Belfry and the summer camp. Patrick Kane's a big Belfry guy.
Yep.
And then I've talked to Mark Scheifele about this last spring during the Jets playoff run, the work that Scheifele and Wheeler do with Adam Oates. This whole specialized coaching and finding that extra layer of offensive gear, I think we're just scratching the surface. Yep. I think this thing is the next whole layer, and it's going to be an issue. You know, the Jets have decided to embrace it. The Jets went to Shifley and Wheeler finally and said, you know what? Just stay open with us and let's communicate about it. And they're A-OK with the Adam Oates thing. Other teams weren't at the beginning, as you remember. But this is where it's all at now.
It's the players catching up with the goalies. Goalies were doing that for many years, like specialized goaltending, studying players. And that's where there was a layer of about 3 or 4 years where you saw the goalies were kind of ahead of the shooters. Now that's not the case because now you're seeing the specialized shooters camps and stuff where they're picking apart goaltenders. Now I've seen and spoke to a shooting coach out of Vancouver who works with Pavelski. They talk about release, where the goaltender will be in certain situations. They're studying goaltenders now, and they're not even looking at the net. It's about getting it away at certain spots.
What about
and,
how much money these guys are going to make from the secondary level? Like, there's probably Toronto parents that are saying, oh, who's this guy that's teaching Austin Matthews about a shot? Yeah. My kid's going to go see him or his understudy or whoever, and they'll pay a fortune.
Yeah, they will.
And there have been guys doing it for a long time. I mean, Steven Stamkos was going to Yari Burski from the time he was, you know, 9, 10 years old.
He's been in Toronto forever, hasn't he?
Who, Yari?
Yeah, hasn't he been here for a long time?
Worked with Brent Burns as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Never heard of that guy. Yari.
There were a bunch of guys in Toronto that had their, like, specialized camps. And
Yari's a beauty.
Yeah.
He does, like, well, the Tampa Bay Lightning hire him, the Ottawa Senators. He does their prospect camps and, and what have you, but he's a piece of work.
Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun in studio. With William Nylander, I heard you guys talking about it today, that, you know, no one knows when this is going to end, but is there a chance, like, that there is something premeditated here? Like, they've got a pretty good idea of when this is going to come to an end? Like, that they're, because Noodles, you've referenced this cap-friendly piece a lot, where, like, the later it goes, front-load the contract.
Yes, that's true. The later you sign, the bigger the cap hit is this year, and the less it is in future years. But I don't believe for a moment that's a strategy on the part of the Leafs.
No.
That they're actually happy. They want Nylander back in the lineup, but they want him back at their number, not Nylander's number. And I think there's a genuine rift here in terms of how big a gulf there is, both on long-term and short-term deals. And I don't know how they're going to bridge it, and I don't know when it's going to end. And I don't even know what to say about it anymore. Because I just think the difference is so vast right now that I don't know what's the trigger point for one side or the other saying, yeah, you know what, I've taken a stand here, but I'm feeling different about it now. I don't see one.
Be interesting to talk to a guy like Trouba in Winnipeg, where I think he was trying to make a stand too, and then just you get to a point where it's just, I'm not taking that stand anymore.
Smaller level, though. I mean,
took a bridge, though, too, didn't he?
Athanasiou was speaking about Nylander.
Yeah,
I don't know if
he wasn't threatening anybody.
I'm just saying, smaller level, but still, he was talking about what he went through and his experience today about William Nylander. Like he said, hey, it's a business, and I got it. There was no hard feelings when it got done. I talked to my agent. I followed the team. And he did say, you stay in shape. And he goes, I think within 2 weeks, William Nylander will be fine. Like, he goes,
I don't think there's an issue there.
Yeah.
Athanasius was, they were at loggerheads over 200K. You know, Nylander at least might be 2 million.
Right.
Right.
You know, or thereabouts.
Bit of a different
chasm. By the time it's all said and done. So I'm just at a loss to figure out what's going to be the mechanism that pushes these two sides together. Is it December 1st? Is that it?
Well, that has to be it, right? Because he's not playing beyond that.
No, exactly.
But to your question about whether either side feels there's a predetermined window, I don't see it at all because as little as both sides are communicating with any of us, I can tell you I sense a frustration rising with each side.
Who gets the hate on quicker? Does the player and the agent get the hate on, is it equal?
It's equal, I think.
Should mention a little breaking news here, too, that the NHLPA just put out a statement saying Austin Watson's 27-game suspension has been reduced to 18 games by the neutral arbitrator. So quite a significant
kind of cut it in by
reduction.
A third, right?
And
cut it by
really
a third,
with
yeah.
no
pre- well.
Nothing for the arbitrator to go on as far as precedent NHL-wise.
No, right. Because it's a unique one. For those who don't know, Austin Watson this summer pleaded no contest to a charge of misdemeanor domestic assault, and the league subsequently suspended him for 27 games. So, and it was 2 weeks ago Wednesday that the independent arbitrator held the appeal, and we thought there was going to be an announcement as early as Wednesday, but the arbitrator needed some more documentation. We thought it was going to carry over to next week, but obviously it's come out today. So 27 down to, you said, 18, Pierre?
18
games.
And obviously, this being a hot button topic, not in hockey, but in society.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be
backlash.
There'll be a big backlash on this one, and maybe and rightfully so.
And it'll be interesting. I was just communicating with someone in the NHL. Not sure whether the league itself will respond tonight, but the league never likes its own suspensions reduced. Let's be honest; they weren't happy when Weidman's suspension was
20
reduced.
20 to 10.
So at some point in the next 24 to 48 hours, I suspect we'll hear from the league in one way or another. But it'll be interesting to be honest again, because everything Bob just covered, this is unprecedented territory. Yep. And how the league handles its public response here will be interesting, because there's no doubt they'd be disappointed, but how will they put that into words, given right. everything that's at play here?
Well, I mean, they kind of have a cushion here with it being an independent arbitrator, don't they? Like,
well,
can't
yes.
they just say, sort? What do you want us
yeah,
to do?
Yeah, but they can express in no uncertain terms how unhappy they are. And what used to happen in the old days, whenever there was an independent arbitrator used, if one side or the other, the PA or the NHL, lost a grievance arbitration, there's always, I think there's usually like a poison pill in there where they can gas the arbitrator.
Yeah.
And that usually happened after those things where if a ruling went against the PA, quite often they'd say, okay, next arbitrator up, let's go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And because they both have to agree on who it is.
And the Predators just essentially put out a non-statement right now saying that they were not involved in the appeal. And as I said before, their focus is on continuing to be the health and well-being of Austin Watson and his family. So they're
right.
They're neutral in this, but it is tough.
Which they kind of have to be.
You can't say anything.
And in the backdrop of this, now that the Austin Watson situation is clarified in terms of how many games he'll miss and what the NHL's position on it was, you've got Slava Voynov waiting in the wings. Slava mm-hmm. Voynov has made it known to the National Hockey League dating back to June, I believe,
yeah.
that he wants to come back to the National Hockey League.
Would it be with Los Angeles? Or
no, I don't think the Kings have interest in bringing him back. But
they would have to trade his rights, I guess, basically.
Yeah, they would have to trade his rights. And it obviously gets very complicated. In Slava Voynov's case, and again, I'm not one to try and put gradients on domestic abuse in any way, shape, or form, but if you were to compare the two police reports, there's a huge difference between the two.
Right.
In terms of the damage that was inflicted. But in any case, so Voynov, you know, he ran afoul of immigration authorities mm-hmm. and whatever because of the charges. He went back and he played in the KHL. He's indicated he wants to come back to the National Hockey League. I believe he met with I think he met with Gary Bettman earlier in the summer. I'm not 100% positive on that. But in any case, either he or his representatives met with the league, and the league basically said, you can apply to come back, but understand that there's going to be a suspension. There's going to be discipline handed down because we don't feel like we ever dealt with your situation, and they didn't. And I think Voynov and his representatives were hoping he would get time served. Time served, though, you know, going to play in the KHL and being paid millions of dollars to play in the KHL right. just because you couldn't play in the NHL, that doesn't mean you suffered a penalty
right.
in the eyes of the National Hockey League. So the league has had discussions, and the sense we got is that if Voynov were to return, he could be looking at 60 to 80 game and maybe a full year suspension, which might chill the marketplace for anybody that wants to bring him back.
Right,
but
right.
it's interesting, this arbitrator's decision taking 27 down to 18, what impact might that have on the NHL in terms of the way they rule on Voynov? I don't know.
Because right. we had heard the June draft, Bob, you and I and Dregs, that there were teams inquiring about Voynov.
Big time.
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, at the end of the day, there was a guy who was a top four right-hand defenseman on the Stanley Cup champion Kings, but obviously balancing the hit PR-wise that they would take as an organization to take on a guy with that kind of charge on him.
That's, I mean, that's the moral dilemma.
It's just
right?
not kosher. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. Well, there's a, you know, and I'd be curious to see what team it is or what teams, But we were led to believe there were multiple teams that had expressed interest.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, look what's going on in baseball right now.
Yeah.
Houston, they said, we're, you know, one strike and you're out. Then all of a sudden they didn't have a closer and Roberto Osuna was available.
Yep.
Now, bit different because the charges were eventually dropped, where Voinov, I don't think there's much disputing it in terms of what he was all about, why he took off. But Houston's in the ALCS. And I think they might win another World Series. And guess who's going to be in the clubhouse party? And guess who's going to be on the streets partying with the team after they win? The fans, not saying it's right or wrong, but teams eventually get to a point where they think, you know what, we can get through this wave.
And I'm not suggesting that Slava Voinov should never be allowed to play in the NHL again, but what I will tell you is if I was an owner of an NHL team, I'm not sure I want to be the team that opens the door up.
Bites the bullet.
I'm sorry if that makes me selfish or self-conscious or whatever, but to me it sends a wrong message to my fan base that I'm okay with it.
We see it, and we've seen it on a different level with Kaepernick. Regardless, I'm not talking about domestic, but I'm just saying if you may be perceived as something that would not be good for your organization, people
It's all about brand, right? It's all
now,
about brand.
And that's totally different, you know, situations. But it's more about teams just don't want that, and it's a moral issue. And personally, like Voinov is a guy who is a terrific player, but that is an awful thing that he did, and I don't think people want that.
It's so layered and complex, and yet there are people out there that say it shouldn't be. That you know that if you're guilty of a heinous act as Voinov was, that you know that means you forfeit your right to earn a living in the National Hockey League. And I to some degree, I understand that, but I also think, I mean, murderers get out of prison after a while. And, you know, is that wrong? Is that right? People can have that discussion all day. I think one of the important things is that it's not just a matter of punishment. If you just punish somebody, you know, what you want to do is you want to punish them for sure, but you also want to try to rehabilitate and make the person understand. And that's where it gets into a nuanced thing of, you know, and it's interesting. And again, people will say this is complex too, but Voinov is still happily married. And people say, well, that's, you know, that's not unusual in these situations. And I understand all that. But, you know, do you want this person to, you know, to be rehabilitated, to understand what they did was so heinous, but there needs to be a huge punishment, but there also needs to be, and I think, you know, this on a much lower level, sometimes you get a player who makes a homophobic or a racial slur, and everybody wants them suspended. Great, I say, sure, suspend them, fine them, do whatever, but try to make sure they understand what they did, why it was wrong, and so that it does never happen again. Mm-hmm. And it goes without saying that domestic abuse, you don't need to explain why it's wrong, it is. But you want that person to have a better understanding of what they did, why they did it, and why it should never, ever happen again if that person's going to be part of your league.
And to a certain degree, every other teammate and player in the league.
Education.
That the message is beyond the player involved, but everyone.
Yeah.
Well, the other complicated thing here with Voinov is we haven't heard from him. We're assuming contrition, but I don't know.
Exactly.
Like, that's another
those
problem.
Are the things that you need to... That, you know, that's got to be all part and parcel of it, too.
Because if he comes in, he's like, I'm not apologizing. I don't think I did anything wrong. Yeah. Well, then what the hell do you do? Then you got a bigger problem.
Now, and as I said, the Kings, I don't believe the Kings have any interest whatsoever in Voinov as a hockey player on their team right now, other than to perhaps facilitate to get him back into the league and move him on somewhere. But there are those within the Kings organization that believe that everything that needs to happen in one of these situations is happening, that he is on the right track and that he does understand and that, you know, they've gone through counseling or whatever the case may be. So I don't know. There's no easy answers here. And I know the default position for a lot of people simply is, well, wash your hands of anybody who does that. Fair enough. You know, on one level, I understand that. On another level, I think everybody deserves a second chance at some point if they've gone through a really rigorous process.
Besides, I can't think of a team that needs a top four right-hand defenseman anyway.
No, never.
It's not
those guys. Only about 12 they grow teams on trees in the league everywhere. Like
that. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. All right, Leafs wings tonight. We'll catch you guys later. Thanks for popping in, both of you.
Thanks, guys.
Here's Bob McKenzie and Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insiders. Leaf pregame in about 15 minutes. You can hear the game right here on TSN Radio. Puck drop at 7:30. Best bets brought to you by ProLiner. Special four-pack of overs. Hockey in October, over the number. Boston-Edmonton tonight, knocked the dust off Oilers, over the number. Buffalo-Colorado tonight, over
it's
the number.
It's all overs.
Detroit-Toronto tonight.
Over the number.
Vancouver, Tampa tonight.
Over
the number.
Throw down 20. You can score 158. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Leafs wings, pregame in about 10 minutes. Puck drop at 7:30. Ray's going to have the call on TSN 4. He spent all day on Twitter. He's still going back and forth with people about Matthews and McDavid. And
I never said that. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have said that.
Who's calling a game with him, CC?
Probably. Yeah, because Gord was here today. So, yeah, it'd be CC.
You think Cuthbert will bring it up? You guys will bring it up in the pregame? Is it on the quiz or something tonight?
You're going to have to tune in to find out.
Ooh, I like that. Good tease.
Yeah, it's a real nice tease.
Great TV tease, too.
Yeah.
The Tatman coming in, Greg Gilbert coming in.
I saw a couple of your quiz questions today.
Are you doing the quiz tonight?
No, there is no quiz.
I thought you did it on Tuesday.
I thought there was a...
No, we only do the quiz.
Oh, mostly. You know what it was? The topics. That's the quizmaster showed me a couple of the topics.
Oh, knows. Starting at 7 o'clock. All right, boys. Enjoy the games tonight. There's a bunch of hockey games. Thursday nighter as well. Eagles-Giants. Eagles laying the points in New York. So that'll be a good game.
One of our fans, reached out and said they appreciate the Peeler talk. They want more of it.
Is that right?
Maybe we'll get back into that at...
5 p.m.?
No, it's 5
10 p.m.?
It's a 4 spot.
That's not 4. Tomorrow
That's
at 4 p.m.
That's the 4 horns.
All right.
We'll chat then.